Hour three, Triple Option, RBKD. Got our lockdown guy, Rod Babers. Dad joke guy, Brad Kellner. And the dirty joke guy today. I need to stop. Kevin Dunn.
I want you to be hard.
I didn't say that today.
He set you up on that one.
Didn't say that today.
Man, you see, I had that ready to go.
You said it once, though.
I teed him up for that.
Fired that one.
Yeah, but you clip everything and then you use it. That wasn't even being dirty. That was probably baseball and pitching or something like that. But we forget because it happened a long time ago and you like to bring it back. Unbelievable.
It's out of context, but.
He is the MVP for a reason. He will throw you under the bus, apparently like Michael used to do back in the day. Don't forget, get the Horn app, get to hornfm.com. That is not hard to do at all. That's actually really easy, and it'll help you out. Listen to us. We're live. We're local. We got 2 hours in, and we got 2 hours to go. Of course, we got Rod's rant coming up here in about 20 minutes, but let's talk some Texas football right now. And, Rod, this is something you had actually brought up last week, kind of a different article. It's Chris Hummer, 24/7, and
he does a good job.
He does a really good job, and I like some of the deep dives that he'll go in and look at. It's like, all right, it's pretty interesting. And he's looking. Last week, you were talking more about five stars and just what the schools have done with
it. Was
them.
Just the blue chips
blue
last
chips.
Week. He
right.
did. He did basically the same thing he's doing now, except for blue chips. But this time, he's doing it with five star players, and you had to have at least. Acquired 10 five-star players in the time span that he gives from 2008. He starts 2008 because Nick Saban's first true recruiting class was 2008. That was his first true recruiting class.
On a 7-6 team, if I believe correctly. Or not 7-6, maybe it was
around
there.
And then they end up winning the national title, three
a
years
year later.
Later.
They won it in 2009.
Yeah, you're right. 2009 against Mac Brown.
So,
first 4-1.
He did it. Yes, you had blue chips. This is more five stars. I'm glad you brought that up, too, because there are some schools that have actually done a pretty good job percentage-wise of turning those guys into either draft picks or first-round picks. They just don't get a lot. And one of those guys that I would talk about is now the defensive coordinator here at Texas.
Yeah.
Pete Kwiatkowski did a really good job with that.
Yeah, the Huskies actually one of the top teams, if you go back and look at the Chris Hummer study that he did, which was about blue chips. The Huskies were top five in turning blue chip recruits into draftable prospects and basically their NFL hit rate. They didn't get a lot of them. They didn't get a ton of the top prospects in the country. But with the ones they got, they developed those guys. So that's really, really good news if you're a Longhorn fan. Of course, Alabama was at the top of that list, of course. Alabama had done the best job of turning their blue chip recruits into draftable prospects. They are also the best when it comes to this five-star study, if you will, about five-star prospects since 2008, first true recruiting class for Nick Saban. This is a great stat. It's mind-blowing. BK gave it to you earlier, but Alabama has signed 41 draft-eligible five-star prospects since 2008. Those players were drafted in the first round at a 48.8% hit rate, which means you got a 49% chance you want to round up. You can only say 50% if you want to. You got a 48.8% chance to get drafted in the first round if you are a five-star prospect and you decide to go to Bama. The other 285 five-stars who didn't sign with Bama, they made it into the first round at a rate of 18.3%. So, I mean, you're talking about more than double the chance to be drafted as a first rounder if you're a five-star and you go to Bama as opposed to going anywhere else. So, Bama's still the king. What they're doing right now has never been done in the history of college football.
They're still the king. Like, they've got the easiest recruiting pitch because all they have to do is hit print, and they show that. The worst on this list, BK, is Texas, and they've actually still been able to get five-star guys, but the percentage is dreadfully low. You kind of talked about it a little bit at 3 o'clock. I want to ask you, now that Sark's in here, is it as simple as it's simple? Obviously, you go win and put guys in the league, but how do you fix it? How do you fix this thing quickly?
You win and you put guys in the league.
All right. How do you do that?
Well, you've got to develop. I mean, you've got to hope that you and the coaches you hired can maximize the talent, because Texas has not struggled to bring talent in. And I'm sure there have been some misevaluations, right?
There have.
And Alabama's had misevaluations. Yes. Ben Davis, a guy who was at Bama and is now at Texas, he was a top 10 player in the country coming out of high school. He's not still playing college football and not grad transferring 5 years into his college football career if he was a top 10 player in the country 5 years ago. It's just not happening. So sometimes there are misevaluations, whether it's from the recruiting experts or from college coaches. But more often than not, I would guess at Texas, it's just a lack of development and bad coaching and a lot of coaching turnover, which makes life a little bit more difficult for these kids as well. That's just what Sark has to do. I mean, he has to develop his talent, and he has to hire coaches who can develop talent as well. And the hope is he's not turning over members of his coaching staff a lot, too, because I think that continuity can be very, very important. So that's why he's paid a lot of money, KD. He's got to find a way to do that, but that's what needs to change. That's the biggest problem for Texas football. Everybody will talk about culture. Everybody will talk about big money donors and boosters. People will talk about this and that. But the biggest issue is they're not developing talent. Why is Alabama the greatest dynasty in the history of college football? They're developing talent. And it translates to wins, it translates to championships, and it translates to high-round draft picks. Why is Texas coming off the worst decade it's ever had? Because they're not developing talent. And that's translating into not wins, not championships, and not first-round picks. So that's what needs to happen. I don't know exactly how it happens, but that's what needs to happen.
One of the ways you hope it happens, Rod, is that you take a blueprint from Alabama, and the BK is exactly right. I mean, they're able to acquire talent. You can talk about how they do that, but then they are able to develop talent, and we know that. And that's where I think they deserve the most love, and that turns into championships. But you go get guys that have been inside there and know that blueprint. It does kind of remind me, though, when you talk about Belichick and also Saban, how much did they actually learn? How quickly can they turn what they learned there and be able to try and duplicate it to some degree here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Bama, in terms of developing blue-chip recruits, this is from the same Chris Hummer study, developing blue-chip recruits and turning them into draftable prospects, they're the best in college football. They do it at a 65% clip. So if you're a blue-chip, four- or five-star recruit, go to Bama, 65% chance that you'll get drafted, period. For Texas, the latest study has Texas at a 28% chance to get drafted if you're a blue-chip and go to Texas. That is the third worst. By the way, the Aggies are right behind the Longhorns at 26% in Chris Hummer's ratings. And Oregon is last among the 27 schools that qualified. And that means you get a certain amount of blue-chip recruits if you've acquired a certain amount of blue-chip recruits in that time span. So you start looking at it, and then obviously, the five-star study we just talked about, Alabama's the best at that, and nobody's even close to them. But you go look at Texas, and if you're a five-star, which means you're the top of the top, right? You're the most elite prospects in the country. Only like 30 to 40 five-star grades are given out every year. Texas is turning those five-star recruits into first-round draft picks at a clip of 7% and turning them into draftable prospects in any round of the draft, 28.6%. That's the worst of all the big-time programs who've acquired at least 10 five-star recruits. So how are you going to get to where Bama is, right? So it's like, how are you going to get there? There are several different factors keeping you from getting there. And all of them are unique to Texas. You know, I talked about the turnover, right? That was a big issue. It's the turnover that Texas had with the coaches. You go look, they'll have their 10th play caller since 2010. It'll be Sark. They'll have their 7th offensive line coach since 2010. They'll have their 5th running backs coach, 8th quarterbacks coach. All right, you get it. So Bama's also had a lot of turnover, but still success.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't say it's just the coaching turnover. It's a multifactorial issue. It's not just the coaching turnover, because Bama's dealing with coaching turnover. And why to tell you, they get better.
Yeah,
they get a new coach and get better, and they're already the top five unit in the country. They'll bring in Sark, who got fired at Atlanta, and then they'll do better.
Ohio State with Tom Herman.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's not just that. I think that's part of the turnover. Is part of that. Just one little piece of it. And then the misevaluations, I think that is a big piece of it, too. It's got to be. You got to be bringing in the wrong guys. If you're not bringing in the wrong guys, you're bringing in the wrong guys for the systems you're running.
Yeah.
And they don't fit.
And wrong guys could be a lot. It could be guys that really don't care about getting to that next spot and don't have the drive and the hunger.
The OKGs, our kind of guys.
Or they don't fit into what you're doing.
Fit into what you're actually doing, right? Yeah. All those different things play a role. And I think that's why Gary Patterson's of the world, Matt Campbell's of the world, they laugh at Texas recruiting rankings. They go, yeah, they got all those guys. They got five-star players, but we got a five-star culture. We brought in the right guys. They brought in the wrong five-star guys. Good luck with that. And they beat Texas with their 3 stars. Okay. All right. So there's something missed. So it's a misevaluation. You're bringing in the wrong kind of 4 and 5 stars. You got to bring in the right 4 and 5 stars. That's got to be part of it. And I think another part of it is, you know, and you brought this up, KD, the systems you are running, at times, they will dictate who you're recruiting, how you develop players, and how you utilize players. What Sark is going to do better than Tom Herman and Charlie Strong and even the end of Mac, he's going to put his players in the best position to succeed, showcase them, weaponize them, utilize them, optimize them, instead of misusing them, misplacing them, and underdeveloping them. That's what's been happening with Bijan Robinson, with Tom Herman. He's got to rotate all the damn receivers so he doesn't play the best players, because everybody's got to get a trophy in his damn program, right? So that is not going to be the same with Sark. You're going to play the best players. I think that will help your development a little bit too, because you will be utilizing the players the right way. Same thing with Garrett Wilson said, I'm not going to Texas. Yeah. Why? Because I see really good players go there. I pay attention, and they go there and they disappear. I'm like, that guy was a really good player.
Yeah.
I thought that guy was as good as I was. He went to Texas and became a scrub. I ain't going there. So you got to figure out, because we all know what you got to get to. We know talent development is the issue, but it's not just one thing.
Right.
It's like eight different things that are involved in that talent development, and Sark's got to one by one look at all those different things, diagnose it, and solve all the problems. What I say about coaches, coaches are just problem solvers. That's all they are. And if you can't solve the problem, you're not a good coach.
Yeah.
The problem right now is development. Sark can't solve it, he ain't a good coach. Move on to the next one.
And he won't be here for very long if he can't solve that problem, as we found out.
So rinse and repeat what's gone on the last decade.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to, but you got to find the right guy. And if Sark gets 3 or 4 years and has similar results to his two predecessors, then he's probably going to be out of here too. Yeah, it's multifactorial. That's very well said, Rod. And I'm sure there has been misevaluations, and I agree. Like, bring in 4- and 5-star guys that fit your culture. But, man, I think Texas has done a worse job than anybody of just maximizing the talent of those guys.
I totally agree.
Like, you should be able to find a way to get the most out of your blue-chip guys.
Right.
If they're in 4- and 5-star kids, yeah, they might not be perfect scheme fits, and they might not have the exact personality that you thought they had when you were recruiting them, but my goodness, find a way.
Mm-hmm.
Every other school deals with that problem, and every other school does a better job of solving that problem. They find a way to get the most out of those blue-chip guys. So, yeah, maybe it's Missy Vowles on the recruiting. I'm sure there are some of those, but it just feels like it's a lack of coaching and the lack of finding ways to get the most out of guys who other schools are finding a way to get the most out of.
I agree. It's player development, and there are a lot of things that go underneath that. But, yeah, I do think there are some misvaluations. There's no misvaluation when you look at Apple Leasing. Apple Leasing is the spot in Austin. If you're looking to lease, maybe you're not looking to lease, get online, see where you stand in the market. It's not going to cost you anything. You can just take that free lease quote and say, hey, this is what I want to be driving, or this is what I want to be spending. What can I get for that? And they're going to give you a quote, give you a lease quote. And that at that point, if you want to test drive it, go for it. They got rates as low as 2.9%. They've got a lot of different financing programs. Scott has built a team. We talk about structuring stuff here with Sark and the Texas program. He has built his program around really good people. They've got reps online. All you got to do is ask them what you're looking for, or give them a customized lease. Call them if you want. 512-346-9977. 512-346-9977, or it's appleleasing.com.
I just pulled up an updated Texas football roster that also includes recruiting rankings. I'm trying to find how many 5-stars the Longhorns currently have on their roster. You've got B.J. Foster. He was a 5-star as a recruit.
Jordan Whittington,
Bijan Robinson.
Afrikaans was not.
Jatavion Sanders would be one. He's obviously just now getting to campus.
I think that's it. That is
well.
It. They had Brew McCoy, but he transferred.
He'll come back.
Tyler Jones is a high 4-star, right?
Tyler Johnson?
Johnson, yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler
Johnson.
Yeah. He's like Alfred Collins. They were like really high. They were like on the border of being 5-stars.
Right.
Some publication
I think
might have
one had him there and so thirsty for a 5-star. It's like, give him a 5-star.
So are any of those 5-star guys potential first-round picks in y'all's opinion? Texas has had 14 5-stars since 08, and only one of them has been a first-round pick. That was Malcolm Brown, the defensive tackle, who, by the way, was the last pick in the first round back in 2015. But of those 4 5-stars, KD, do you think Texas can start to reverse the trend with the guys who are already on campus?
Yeah, I think the next guy, and look, Bijan's the most talented guy of all those and would be my sure bet to be a really good NFL player, but you got to look at how they value running backs. And look, I know there have been some taken in the first round. I think that's only going to continue to trend towards late first round. So yeah, he may still be the best bet, but I would put my money on Alfred Collins. I think Alfred Collins is a freak, and that is a position that is valued where you may not even get a first round grade. It can go in the first round, whereas Bijan could get a first round grade and not go in the first round.
Alfred Collins was a 4-star, though, so he didn't fit qualifications.
Yeah. I know.
Thanks for listening, Katie.
I was listening, too, and I just jumped on it because I'm such an Alfred fan.
So the answer is no, then.
Color me Bastrop.
Yeah.
It's not going to be B.J. Foster. He's not going to be first round pick.
No, Bijan.
Bijan's your most likely guy. I mean, maybe Jordan Whittington.
But you're right. The value of the running back position, he's not going to go in the first round.
I doubt it.
Maybe Jordan Whittington can get there if he shows that versatile skill set. We're reaching.
My point is, I
don't know if this is obviously going to change anytime soon. That's a problem.
Since 1999, though, you've only had 4 first-round draft picks that have been 5-stars from Texas. That's in the last 23 years. So you had Roy Williams, Sed Benson, V.Y., Malcolm Brown. That's it.
That's it.
That's your first-round pick.
Corey Redding wasn't one.
He wasn't one. So I would say, honestly,
Chris
infamously, notoriously, Texas, since the late 90s, has not really done well at developing 5-stars into first-round picks or really into draftable prospects. My number since 1999, they've had 16 5-stars that were drafted. That puts them at a 45% clip to get drafted overall, period.
That's a great point. So when I was doing radio in the early 2000s, I got criticized for saying you're being too hard on Mac, and part of that was that. Rod, I looked at Sims and Redding and said, well, more of these guys need to be first rounders. And they weren't. The NFL rep on Texas players not being developed started with Mac.
It did. It started. Oh, yeah, it did. Because, you go look at the list of
That's
guys.
The reality.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, if you are a 5-star and go to Texas, and we're talking about since 1999, she's talking about 23-something years of research or whatever, you have basically a 17% chance to get drafted in the first 2 rounds. You have a 34% chance to get drafted in the first 3 rounds. Here are the guys who were drafted in the second round or later, 5-stars at Texas. Sergio Kendall, Justin Blaylock, Corey Redding, Chris Sims, Roy Miller, Curtis Brown, Jordan Hicks, Malik Jefferson, Tony Hills, Frank Okam, Caden Stearns, Rod Wright.
Tony Hills, I drop foot. I'll give him a break on that.
Yeah,
he came in as a tight end.
Yeah,
too.
Then you had a lot of guys who just were undrafted. B.J. Johnson, undrafted. Chun Childs, Mason Walters, Jackson Jeffcoat, Mike Davis, Malcolm Brown, the running back.
Yeah.
Then you had a lot of guys who just transferred. You had,
Did you say 48%, though, of the 5-stars who were drafted at all since 99?
Was that 45.7% is what I have.
Okay. That number's not great.
It's not great.
But since 08, that number is
28.6%.
Yeah, it's
the start of Mac. Right. Like, it shows you, when Mac was rolling, he was able to develop. But then the end of Mac, and then obviously Charlie and Tom, it just completely disappeared.
Right, but even Mac all the way through, when they're winning national championships, I would tell you that if we're just looking at 5-stars or guys like that becoming first-rounders, all in all, it worked. We know that. But that was always something that left a little to be desired.
Underachieved. Yeah. The fact that, I guess, we can get into this in Rod's Round of the Day because I know it's a deep discussion and we can keep it going. But you know what? We'll just do that. I won't even start it here because I start and I won't stop.
Here.
So we'll do that.
It's like peeing.
We'll continue the discussion. We'll talk about talent development at Texas, where things got a little mucked up and where Texas got lost and how Sark can help them find their way. Also, man, this team... I'm not going to say they're going to win the title, but I'm starting to believe that they can. I still think the Nets are going to win it all, but I'm starting to believe this team's got a shot to win it. We'll come back and talk about them, too, and get a little NBA discussion in, a little potpourri, a little smorgasbord in Rod's Rant of the Day. On the other side, right here on the Triple Option with RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. We're talking some Longhorn football. I want to keep the discussion going because it's, I think it's important to look at history. Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Oftentimes we see ourselves repeating similar cycles, even on the 40 acres. And I think because a lot of the coaching staff doesn't learn from the previous coaches, there are some of those mistakes. Remember Tom Herman coming here saying, I didn't watch any film on the players with the previous staff. And I don't know why. At the time.
I hope he's lying.
At the time, I think we kind of looked at it, and we're like, maybe it's coach speak. Maybe he's just saying that to say something. But even if you were, that'd be a stupid thing to just throw out there. But I digress.
Yes.
Look at the history, though, of why Texas has issues with development. And in the last 10 years, I think a lot of it started with the offensive identity crisis, because we were bringing in these players and you really didn't know how to utilize them, how to weaponize them, and then things got off track, because then once you can't maximize those players on campus, then they can't be the best version themselves. They can't get seen by the league. They're not coveted by the league. Then you can't produce those NFL draft picks. Then players stop coming to Texas because they see that Texas doesn't necessarily help them get to their ultimate goal, which is trying to get to the league. And I remember when this happened. You might remember it too, KD and BK. You probably remember some of this as well. Even as a student on the 40 acres yourself back in the time that when
student. That's funny.
Well, just Kyle, how
the guy went to class for him.
I don't know. 2008. What were you doing like in 2008? Were you in school still?
High school.
Yeah, so I'm saying. Like, yeah. But you were keeping up with the team still. You're a sports junkie.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm saying you probably remember some of this stuff too, just keeping up with it. But remember when Texas in 2010, of course, the fall from grace, and you'll remember this, KD, for the first time ever, we heard Mac kind of call his shot with his offense. He was so frustrated after the 2009, that national title season of 2010, BCS national title game lost to Bama, that he actually said after that game and that offseason, we are going to be a power running team.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
He had never, ever on the 40 acres announced what the offensive identity of the team was going to be before the season even started. And the reason he never did that was because Mac Brown was a formula coach. And I would say there's two types of coaches. There are formula coaches and system coaches. And Mac was a formula coach. A system coach can be a defensive or offensive coach, but they take that system with them all throughout their career. They tweak it, trying to perfect it, but they always have that system. It's their calling card. It's their signature, mm-hmm. right? Mike Leach in the air raid, that's his system. Urban Meyer had his system. Nick Saban has his defensive system. Gus Malzahn, Art Briles, system coaches. Everybody knows what their system is, and anywhere they go, they're bringing in that damn system. Mike Shanahan, the Shanahans in the zone running scheme. The system will come with him.
Yep.
All right. And everything is geared around it. The acquisition of talent, the way they build the offensive scheme, the offensive identity, all that stuff. But then there are formula coaches, and these coaches are a little bit different, right? Formula coaches, Mac Brown's one of them, never coming more and more rare, but Matt Rule's one of these types of coaches, John Harbaugh. I think now Joe Judge is probably in that category. Jason Garrett was a formula coach. He didn't have a system. He just got a.
I don't think he had a formula.
Yeah, either. I was about to say. Do we have a third option here?
That's a good point. A system is more of a system is a plan, yeah. And the formula is more of a guide. And with, I always say you will like this analogy. So it's like baking, right? If you're a system coach, it's like baking with Duncan Hines or Betty Crocker. All you got to do is add some milk. Add some eggs here, add a little some vegetable oil, mix it up, put in the oven for the allotted amount of time, it should be ready to go. That's what Mike Leach does, right? Insert
exact
quarterback here.
Exact measurements, right?
Exactly. I got the air raid. I know what it takes to win. I know what kind of receivers I need. Just give me this kind of quarterback, these type of receivers, boom, and it will work. But Mac Brown, these formula coaches, they're more coaches who got to cook from scratch.
Yep.
Right? They get the best ingredients they can. Just give me the best ingredients I can at every level, at every position, and I'm going to look at my raw materials at the end of the day and what I got to work with, and then I'm going to come up with my own recipe, and I'm going to make up a little something. And Mac Brown, it worked here at Texas, right? His formula was, hey, I'm going to get the best quarterbacks I can. I'm going to build a system around those quarterbacks. Chris Sims, it was a pro-style offense with Chris Sims. Probably should have been more spread, but I digress. It was a pro-style. With Colt McCoy, you get your West Coast hybrid spread system, high-percentage passing game. With VY, it's a zone read option scheme. It changed it based on the quarterback that he had and based on that talent that he had available to him. I remember the 2004 offense, how different it was from 2005 offense. Go watch the 04 offense. They're running 12 personnel.
Yeah.
Two tight ends. Why? We had two really good tight ends. Mm-hmm. You had Bo Scaife and David Thomas. You had NFL tight ends out there better than your wide receivers. And you had damn good running backs. So why not give them more blockers? 04 was very different schematically than 05. Greg Davis would often tweak based on the formula, based on the ingredients that were provided to him. So go and fast forward 2009. Texas loses the national title game. How do they lose it? And by the way, and you might remember this too, KD, because you were in California at the time. Mac Brown was so confident. Mac Brown.
He should have been. Mark Barron was playing safety. Like, that's why Jordan Shipley couldn't be covered.
He couldn't be covered. And Mac knew it. Mac knew he couldn't be covered, and Mac knew he had Colt to deliver the ball, and they couldn't stop that combination. They couldn't stop the chemistry of Colt and Jordan. He knew. He came. He didn't say we were going to win, but basically he said everything, but, man, we're going to win this damn game. Mm. Like, I had never seen Max so confident in my life. Went to practice, never seen him that confident.
I think they do if he stays healthy. He was 24-21 with Garrett Gilbert in the fourth quarter.
I believe Greg McElroy actually said it later on. He was like, I think Texas wins if Colt McCoy stays healthy.
It ain't a thing, boys.
I believe.
Yeah, I know.
I agree, but you know, we don't have that. But I said Mac was really confident. So fast forward, Mac loses the game because Colt ends up getting hurt in the game. Very unfortunate. And Garrett Gilbert comes in, almost is the greatest story ever told, but it's not. And I think at that point, Mac started to resent his formula because his formula was very quarterback centric, and quarterbacks are fragile.
Especially if you're running speed option left with their throwing shoulder.
Exactly. So so Colt gets hurt. That keeps Mac from winning a national title, winning his second. Imagine how different his legacy is. But don't forget, even before that, hell, Chris Sims and his fragile psyche keeps him from winning a Big 12 title and appearing in a national title game when we couldn't beat Colorado after we had beaten them by 30-plus points earlier that year because my man Sims had a bad game, threw four interceptions, had a fumble that he lost, had a bit of a meltdown.
He imploded.
Same thing in the Oklahoma games, right? Oh. Sims had, four interceptions in one Oklahoma game, three interceptions in another, no touchdown passes in those last two Oklahoma games. Mac Brown's thinking, man, I got the team. If my quarterback can just give me a little better performance, I know we can win these big games. And I think he starts to watch Nick Saban. He's studying college football. You know, he studies all of his peers. And he starts thinking, this dude's winning national titles with Greg freaking McElroy.
You know what McElroy went that game? I got it in front of me. He was 6-for-11 for 58 yards and no touchdowns.
Exactly. Mac looks across the
Natty,
room. How the hell did that guy, that quarterback beat my quarterback? Yeah. Even Garrett Gilbert basically performed better.
Yeah. In four picks, but he went for 186 and two touchdowns.
Exactly. So I think at that point, I think Mac looks around and Mac says to himself, okay, you know what? I want that Nick Saban formula. I want a more well-rounded formula that can win with A.J. freaking McCarron or Jake Coker or whatever the hell his name is. Ironically, now Nick Saban is a quarterback formula.
Because Saban changed.
Because Saban
great
evolved.
Point, yeah.
Ironically, while Mac was devolving, the rest of the college football world started to evolve. And ironically, I think we all agree, if he puts Garrett Gilbert in an air raid spread system, which he was when he played his best football in the June Jones with the run and shoot, Garrett Gilbert thrives here at Texas. But Mac didn't look at it as a formula. He didn't look at Garrett Gilbert and go, what's he good at? And how do I maximize this guy? He went, nope, we are going to be a ground and pound running team. We are going to be Bama. Didn't work out that way because your team wasn't built like that. And you can't just rebuild the roster. You can't just remake the roster overnight, which is what Mac thought he could do. So Mac failed there after proclaiming they were going to be. And this is where the offensive identity crisis starts because he went from trying to be a formula coach, which he was naturally, to being a system coach without a system.
Yeah.
He didn't have a system. He just made up one. He's like, no, that's not how it works, Mac. So then fast forward 2000, he fires Greg Davis because the system didn't work, brings in Brian Harsin. Brian Harsin runs what I call the Seinfeld offense. It's a show about nothing, all right, because it has no real identity. Then he's gone. Major brings in his pro spread tempo, still really didn't work, and Mac just really couldn't figure it out. Ironically, now Mac does. He's a formula coach, but has hired Phil Longo, who runs the air raid.
I know.
And he refused to run the air raid when he mocked it when he was here. And by the time he left around 2013 and 14, the air raid becomes the offense of note in the Big 12 with the Art Browse. If Kingsbury comes in, with Lincoln Riley coming in, and everybody's running the air raid to whip up on Texas when Texas should have been one of the first teams to run it after Oklahoma won national title with it when Garrett Gilbert came into the fold because he was the perfect quarterback to run. He'd been basically running the same damn thing, a run and shoot at Lake Travis.
Yep.
So anyway,
one of the reasons why they're a better program all time than Texas is that they've taken those chances and been proactive.
Yep.
And you don't think about the state of Oklahoma a lot with this, but they've had good foresight, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, great foresight. Yeah. No doubt.
I mean, going back to
Bob Stoops. It's Bob Stoops.
Yeah, going back to Bud Wilkinson, actually. But Bob Stoops,
modern era.
To be that type of program and to say, no, I'm going to go with this because I didn't like facing this when I was at Florida and Kentucky did this to me, even though we won that game.
Yeah.
Blew him out.
But Mike Leach is the guy. This scheme right here is going to help me win a national title. And they were both two scheme guys because Bob Stoops brought his defensive scheme. So that's the history of it. It was Max. And then after that, you bobble Garrett Gilbert. He ends up leaving. That starts your quarterback hell you go in, right? You go into quarterback hell after that, and you don't find your quarterback savior. You get the bridge and Shane Buccelli, but you don't get your savior until Sam Ellinger. Now you're out of quarterback hell, but you wasted Mason Walters. These are five-star guys, by the way. Mason Walters. Remember Darius White, the wide receiver?
Oh, yeah.
Five-star coming in. Remember
Dallas kid, I believe.
Yeah, remember Darius James? He was a five-star offensive lineman. End up going to Auburn. They end up playing in the league for a little bit, too. Malcolm Brown, the running back, five-star running back coming in, still in the damn league because he's that good. Mike Davis, five-star receiver. All those guys came in, guys, in 2009, 2010,
Jonathan Gray's
2011.
In there, right?
Jonathan Gray's in there, too. Mm-hmm. And your offensive identity crisis, those guys were supposed to keep you from getting to that type of valley, right? They're supposed to keep you from getting there. You're supposed to build your offense around those types of players. Malcolm Brown, Jonathan Gray. Texas couldn't do that. They were in the midst of an offensive identity crisis, going from system to formula coach, not knowing who the hell they were. And I think now you figure some of those things out. You're no longer in quarterback hell. Your tight end room is no longer in. It's not the endangered species it used to be on the 40 acres. Offensive lineman used to be a wasteland. Now you have an offensive lineman getting drafted again. So you've solved a lot of the problems on the offense. And I think the last piece was Sark, because what Sark is going to do is Sark has a scheme he's bringing in. So he's a scheme coach, right? He's a system coach. He's got his own system. But not only that, he's also calling the plays. The buck will literally stop with him. We haven't had that, honestly, since Mac and Greg Davis. Ever since then, it's been, who's calling the plays? What's going on? Oh, okay. You know what I mean? Tom Herman had his collaborative effort. Charlie Strong kept switching offensive coordinators. Went from Sean Watson, and he brought in Joe Wickline, and then he ended up bringing in Sterling Gilbert. And then, of course, later on in Tom Herman, he switched up offensive coordinators too. So now, I do think you'll have more clarity and transparency with the offense. And not only that, Sark, we know the one thing he does really, really well is he maximizes, he utilizes, weaponizes, optimizes players. He did it with Devontae Smith, did it with Najee Harris. We've seen him time and time again do that. That was one of the issues with Tom Herman and with the, you know, the offensive identity crisis, right? Because to me, an identity is just force feed the football to your best players.
Mm-hmm.
Then the identity will come naturally. Yeah. If you're coming up with ways to get the football to your best players, the identity will form naturally.
And it'll be flexible year to year.
That's why at Alabama, they ran red, which is a four wide receiver package in 2019, and they asked Sark about it. He's like, well, I had four first-round wide receivers.
Easy.
I'm not going to have them on the bench.
Right.
Like, I'm putting those guys on the field. With Tom Herman, we were trying to figure out why he wouldn't put Devin Duvernay and Jake Smith on the field together. Oh, they play the same position. Who gives a flight? What are you talking about, man? Like, you're your best player. What are you talking about? And so the Bijan Robinson thing, so you won't have that issue with Sark. That will naturally form an identity. He's got his tent poles. He believes the running back is the identity of the offense. Tight end is the second most important position behind quarterback. There are things he believes in that I think will avoid some of the pitfalls offensively Texas was dealing with during the offensive identity crisis. That's all.
Good stuff.
Sorry,
man.
That was
the... No, it's called Brand of the Day for a reason.
I said I'd get to NBA, but I didn't. But here's your one NBA factoid, and I said I'd get to NBA, and I didn't. Devin Booker and the Suns.
I thought so.
Man, I think I might pick them to make it to the finals. I think they can beat the Clippers.
Yeah, they can.
They can beat the Clippers, man. They're playing at an unbelievable level right now. They have the best defense in the playoffs. And how about this little factoid? DeAndre Ayton, when he's guarding Nikola Jokic, and when he's been guarding Nikola Jokic in his series, the Suns have outscored the Nuggets by 29 points in the 62 minutes where Ayton and Jokic are on the floor together.
Hmm.
Yeah, Jokic's issue is...
no help.
Well, he's not a good defender.
Not as much
help. And the Suns are the best pick-and-roll team in the league, and Jokic is one of the worst pick-and-roll defenders in the league, and they are just picking him apart.
With those feet, that's shocking.
Yeah, right? Jokic is a great player, but lateral
great
quickness,
player.
Not
MVP.
Something that he has.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Suns looking good, up 2-0 over the Nuggets, and both of those games have been blowouts. Good stuff. Rant of the day, talking Texas football. And a little NBA conversation thrown in as well. It's the triple option with RBKD. Huh, what an offseason it's been for Dak Prescott. It got even better yesterday. We'll tell you what happened next.
This is a good funky beat here. Well, Motown S Thursday here on the Horn. Hope you guys are enjoying the show. Guys and gals, when I say guys, I'm talking to everyone. We don't discriminate here. That's how we pull it. Hornap, hornfm.com.
What if women were human?
No, wow. Once again, that was kind of taken out of context.
Well,
there's some Scottie Pippen, Larsa stuff going on with me at that time.
How can that be? What were you talking about at the time?
There was a lot surrounding that.
Okay.
There was a lot that bookended that.
What if women were human?
No.
What if women were human?
No. He spliced all that. He got a what and an if. He's that good. He's that good at what he does.
Know.
I'm still waiting for your answer to the question.
Yes, they're human, BK. They are human.
So what happens?
What if?
then we just live in a great world.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens.
Okay.
And that's
it's
what's
not
going
hypothetical
on.
Tuesday, but
no,
what if
it's
women
not.
Were human?
Unbelievable. God, you know, next time BK's gone, I got to make sure we got to get John in there. And I got to get that stuff deleted. I know you've got it probably. You've got it locked up. You've got it vaulted somewhere.
He probably hid it somewhere. He wasn't supposed to hide it.
Wouldn't be the first time for him.
There you go. I've got it archived.
Nice.
Yeah, not the first time. Well done there, sir.
All right, let's get into a little off the record two here. And we talked about Michael Jordan earlier, and I just mentioned Larsa Pippen. You can go back to hornfm.com and listen to that about an hour ago. And Scotty throwing a little bit of shade at Michael, but also just wanting more love.
He just wants love.
He wants love.
And Larsa can't give it to him.
She can give it to a lot of people. She can't give it to him, apparently.
She won't give it to him.
But part of that, too, is that I think, just think about what Jordan was then and also what he's become. And part of that is the Jordan brand.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was going to blow up and be a great businessman. And I say I knew that even when he already had become one in the 90s. But, guys, I didn't think in 2021 that we were going to be talking about, like, when the OU football program gets the Jordan brand, how big of a deal that is for recruiting and everything that goes into
yep.
it. And, BK, now we got one of your guys, Dak Prescott, who's going to be joining the Jordan brand. What does that do for you?
Well, it tells me that Dak Prescott has had the greatest offseason of all time.
Yeah, exactly.
Signing a 4-year, $160 million contract extension with the Cowboys, which $126 million of that is guaranteed. And now he gets this 5-year deal with Jordan, and apparently he's going to be Jordan's highest paid NFL athlete.
Okay.
Jordan doesn't have a ton of NFL players.
I can't think of many.
Le'Veon Bell is one.
All right.
Kyle Pitts is one coming out of school. Right. Chase Claypool is one. Joe Hayden. It's kind of a random assortment.
Joe Hayden got okay.
Yeah. There's a couple of more bigger ones than that. I don't know why none of them are coming to my mind right now. But Dak Prescott, yeah, he's the only quarterback signed to Jordan Brand. Then he's going to be the highest paid NFL player on the Jordan roster. So
Earl Thomas, Honey Badger, Jamal Adams.
Yeah, all of those guys way better than any of those guys I mentioned.
Right.
Sorry for not giving you all the good stuff
Randy
there.
Moss.
But it's great for Dak, man. It's really, really cool. And Jordan's way cooler than Adidas, man. I mean, Dak is a very popular player. Anytime you're the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, people know who you are and you can sell. But Dak Prescott, a very likable guy,
mm-hmm.
very marketable player. But even he can't sell Adidas to the kids. Nobody could sell Adidas to the kids.
Yeah, so Adidas to the kids are like Adidas was to the when we were kids?
Yeah.
Not cool?
Not cool.
Not cool.
It's not even close to Jordan-level cool.
Yep. Run DMC did
my
the,
Adidas.
They did the best job with Adidas.
Great song.
They did market it.
I think those are the only Adidas that I have signed by
Wasn't
them.
Kobe Adidas at one point?
I think at one point.
Yeah,
but he jumped ship.
Oh, yeah, of course he did.
Smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dak's going to be able to sell Jordans. I mean, they're going to make this partnership work for sure. So good for Dak. I'm sure he's getting paid fat. We know he's the highest paid player. We haven't seen the exact figures for this deal financially, but Rod, safe to assume it's a lot more money in the bank for one Dakota Prescott.
Yeah, it's a smart move, too, by the Jordan brand, because I'm just trying to think about the other quarterbacks they could go after. If you're just looking at upside and buy low, sell high, that kind of mentality, this is a good time to invest in Dak, right? Because look at his wide receivers, look at, you know, the weapons he's got around him. So many offensive line ends up, you know, holding together and staying relatively healthy. They should be able to protect Dak. And I don't know what defense is going to be able to stop that offense. Now, the Cowboys defense won't be able to stop anybody either.
No.
So it'll just be a straight up shootout. But there aren't going to be a lot of defenses in the NFL that are going to be able to stop this Cowboys offense. It's going to be prolific.
Yeah, no doubt. And Brand's love storylines.
Yep.
Companies love to market storylines, and you've got Dak coming off an injury, a serious injury.
That's a great point, too.
You've got that, too. So yeah. All offseason long leading up to the season, it's the comeback tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got that, which is easy to brand. Not that Jordan needs any help marketing things, but that's just another gift for them to use, too.
Yep.
I mean, Dak Prescott is, I mean, nobody's Shaq, because Shaq is on every other commercial these days. I mean, that's I say remarkable. It all the time. I think Shaq would advertise for genocide if the checks cleared.
Wow.
Like, he is advertising for everything these days.
See, why do you save that? That was pretty direct.
Wow.
Accurate.
Save it, though. I want you to play that next time.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't need to make a drop out of it. Wow. I'm convinced he would.
Just made a genocide joke.
Well,
that's tough to pull off.
That's tough to pull off.
I made a Shaq joke.
In any era.
Yeah.
Genocide was part of it.
Well, I'm cool with it. I stand by.
Although he is talking about a guy, we were talking about a guy who also, not Shaq, but MJ, who had the Hitler stash and pulled that off in a commercial.
Okay. Unfortunately. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't like your parallel very much. I'm offended by that.
Okay. Now you're offended.
But how about Dak Prescott? I mean, he's doing stuff for Anheuser-Busch.
Yep.
He's got a deal with Pepsi,
mm-hmm.
Sleep Number, Danon Yogurt.
Yeah, I've
Campbell's,
seen that commercial.
Campbell's Soup.
I've seen that one.
He does 7-Eleven spots up in Dallas.
Shout out.
AT&T, Beats by Dre, and now Jordan. I mean, he probably has more, too. Did I say Sleep Number? I did say Sleep Number.
There's
he's all over the place, man.
What's the total number? Do we know of what he's making? That's got to be upwards of $100 million from all those combined.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. He's doing well for himself. It's been a great offseason
he's likeable,
for
though.
Dak Prescott. Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Likeable.
He's a great story.
Yeah.
Great story.
He's likable. I've talked about this. Ben Rogers, buddy who lives pretty close to him and lives in the same neighborhood, which I think is going to change with all this money. Still a really nice neighborhood, but the kids
seriously.
Around there, like Dak could not. So this is not on camera. This is not, this is stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Incredibly good guy, likable guy, easy guy to put the key, give him the keys and say, you're going to be our guy marketing wise and on the field.
Yeah.
And he's been through so much too. The loss of his mother, loss of a brother.
Yeah.
He's overcome a lot too.
That was just last year, wasn't it?
That was during the pandemic.
Man,
yeah.
That was terrible.
That makes him more attractive, like easy to like and respect what he brings to the table.
I know we're on a break here, but we talked about Last Dance earlier. Let's not forget why all this is even possible. Why we know that thing that we didn't know how to pronounce early on, Nike. Because of Jordan's mom who made him go to that meeting.
Yeah.
Remember? It was Michael's mom that said, no, you're going to go to this meeting and you're going to listen to him.
Because he was going to sign with...
He was going to sign with... What was the big one back then? Who was it? It may have been Adidas.
Might have been Adidas.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Mm.
Puma.
Reebok.
Reebok. Champion.
Wow.
Went with Nike.
Yeah.
The rest is history.
Thanks, Mama MJ.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. All right, it's the triple option with RBKD. Congrats to Dak signing with Jordan Brand. More money in the pocket for Rain Dakota Prescott the first. It's the triple option with RBKD. When we come back, we go from talking about Dak to talking about Deshaun Watson. Where does he want to go? We know that he doesn't want to be in Houston, but we might have a hint to where he wants to play next. And also, another questionable decision made by the Houston Texans. We get into it up next.